Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. Do not forget to follow us on Instagram at TSN1050, where there will be Insta stories, some best of clips from the show, and some very cool contest opportunities to win tickets and more. Again, on Instagram at TSN1050.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
Derek Taylor in for Brian Hayes, alongside Dave Festchuk of the Toronto Star. And England is out of the World Cup as Croatia advances 2-1 in extra time. An improbable victory that statistically they should have had, but to come up from one goal down and beat this England team, the darlings of the World Cup, now Croatia, the darlings, and as Christian Jack said, they've been behind in each of the last three matches, and somehow they are going to Sunday's World Cup final. Dave, there wasn't really a point where I thought it was going to happen. I thought they might get the penalties, and England is just the team of destiny. But man, Mario Mandzukic in extra time, and Croatia advances.
Yeah, I think England, you know, they led this game for an hour. They were up 1-0. They had a great chance to go up 2-0 with Harry Kane in the 29th minute. Ball on his foot. I'm sure it's a moment he's going to regret as an athlete for years to come, and I'm sure it's a moment that England fans will replay in their minds for maybe decades to come, because it was the chance to get up 2-0, and as Christian Jack pointed out, if you're up 2-0 in a semifinal, hard to imagine you cough that up, but boy, did England kind of disappear in the second half, and it was all Luka Modric, their wonderful midfielder for Croatia, orchestrating that possession, and of course, Super Mario. As you point out, who's had a heck of a week, you know, with Cristiano Ronaldo joining his club in Juventus and now heading off to the World Cup final for the first time for this nation that's only existed since the early 90s. Most of these guys have grown up in a war-torn country that's, as Christian Jack says, very complicated in its politics. Man, you can't help but enjoy such an underdog tale at an event this huge.
I love that you brought up Luka Modric when we were talking to KJ, because one, tremendously influential player, but two, it's part of soccer that I love. Like I came to soccer later in my life and I thought, ooh, that guy's a monster. And it would turn out he's 6 feet tall. And then you see Modric, who they list at 5'8", but come on. And he might be 135 pounds soaking wet, but it doesn't matter, because that's my ball. Yeah. It's the way he plays it. And that's, as KJ said, that's what soccer is now. It's controlled through the midfield. So size is not really a thing. There are certainly ways that size benefits you, but guys like Modric can negate that almost entirely.
Well, and just looking at his story, I mean, I don't know him intimately. I don't follow soccer intimately. You and I are both in the same boat on that. You know, we're so wrapped up in the big four sports, and you in the CFL. I'm not a global soccer guy, but I love watching the big events. So, you know, reading a little bit about him in the past couple of weeks as Croatia has risen. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, saw his grandfather shot dead when he was 6 years old, grew up as essentially his family was refugees in a war-torn country, was thought of as an athlete as way too small, way too light,
yep,
never going to be the professional footballer he always dreamt of being. And yet here he is on the stage. And you know, to hear Christian Jack say that he thinks he should be the MVP of this tournament, win or lose,
yeah,
against France. I mean, that was my instinct. Like, of the games I've watched, and I've seen most of the big ones, there's nobody that stood out like Luka Modric in terms of his ability just to create offense for his team, to keep the ball when it looked like they were going to lose possession, and to really just be the fuel of that Croatian engine.
Yeah, I remember when he joined Tottenham, you went, oh, okay, this guy's really good. Then he left in 2012 to go to Real Madrid, and I thought, oh, that's interesting, because you're going to go to Real and you're going to kind of get, Real Madrid can buy anybody they want. You're going to get kind of lost in the wash, but then he far exceeded what I thought, and I mean, three straight Champions League finals. He's way past what I thought he would be, and now leads his team to the World Cup final. It is a remarkable story.
Well, you think about it. I mean, what the knock on Cristiano Ronaldo, the knock on Lionel Messi, is they've never won a World Cup, despite being guys who are probably in the top few of all time in terms of players. If Luka Modric could do it, imagine how that would vault his status. He could be the MVP of a World Cup, with becoming just the ninth country to win the World Cup, because there's only eight that have won it before. Of course, France has won before. They're also in the final. They won in 98. But it's such, you know, I was looking at the FIFA rankings. There are 212 countries in the FIFA rankings.
Yeah.
Only eight of them have won a World Cup. To become the ninth, for they would have been probably, they wouldn't have been the most likely, right, to add their name to that list in by any measure. So it's a heck of an underdog tale. It's an amazing story. And you can't help, I don't have a dog in the fight in the final, but it's hard not to want to see the underdog win here.
You'd love to see Croatia poach one in the first 15 minutes and go, okay, France, you're the favorites, but you're down one. Come get one. Because Croatia, I mean, the match against Denmark had to be fairly evenly thought of. The match against Russia, Croatia probably a favorite in that one. At least betting-wise, they were a dog to England. But to France, I remember seeing them play the U.S. just advanced ahead of the World Cup, and you see the crew, they throw out these giant names of prominent players, and I mean, youngster Kylian Mbappe. It was the first time I saw him play. It was the first game, and I thought, what have I been missing?
Yeah.
I know what PSG is spending 145 million euros or whatever on. I get it now. They go into this match as real underdogs, and if they were to win this one, oh my goodness.
Well, it's amazing. I mean, pre-tournament, I was just looking at the odds pre-tournament. I mean, France was among the favorites. I mean, I remember Gareth Wheeler, our resident soccer expert here at TSN 1050, had France to win it. Brazil was the gambling favorite,
for sure,
no doubt. But France, I think, was 7-1. But Croatia came into this thing as like a 35-1 underdog. I mean, not the longest of shots by any measure, but in that probably, and definitely in the top 15 or so of teams that could win this thing. But certainly nobody's favorite. Nobody's darling kind of dark horse, and at least nobody that I saw talking about this tournament in the lead up to it was really pinning Croatia as a team that could make a deep run. So for them to do this and to knock off England, as you say, that a team that looked like it might have been a team of destiny that was going to, you know, sort of shrug off that 50-plus year curse of not winning a World Cup in for the country that sort of sees itself as the game's birthplace in a lot of ways, and certainly one of its spiritual caretakers, for them to beat England today, a massive achievement.
Sometimes the draw breaks your way, right? These competitions come down to luck. In that we finished this spot in our group, and France, Portugal, Argentina, Brazil, and Belgium are all on the other side of the bracket, and we will not have to play them until the final. Belgium has to go through France? France has to go through Belgium. That's just as bad. France had to go through Argentina, a stout defensive squad in Uruguay, and then Belgium, who, I mean, I don't know, are they going to be the favorites for the 2022 World Cup? But they'll be right up there.
Well, maybe it's England. I mean, England came in as one of the youngest teams and turned heads. And and as Christian Jack pointed out, I mean, it wasn't just about getting to the semifinal. It was about sort of turning around the culture of that program.
100%.
They'd been an underachieving kind of wayward program for so long. And I think Gareth Southgate, their fine manager, and his wonderful waistcoats definitely deserve a lot of credit. I don't know, probably the manager more than the waistcoats, but the waistcoats, man, how many articles did I read about the fashion trend he began with that fashion choice?
They tried so hard for so many years to find just the right manager, and we'll go and get the best managers in the world. And Sven Jorn Eriksson to second choice Steve to Fabio Capello, Roy Hodgson, an up and comer. Then they had Sam Allardyce, who left with a perfect record because he was out after one game. And then Gareth Southgate, who was like the under 20 coach, like, hey, it's your turn. And yeah, he has turned things around, and there should be a ton of optimism for England. There should be a ton of joy for Croatia, because taking out the English and advancing to Sunday's World Cup final. You can hear it right here on TSN 1050. The broadcast with Wheeler and Noel Butler starts at 10 a.m. Eastern time. You can tell I do SportsCenter a bunch. 10 a.m. kickoff at 11 o'clock. We are a little under a week away from the All-Star Game, the Midsummer Classic, known as the dead time for sports fans, in which all we get is the Home Run Derby and the Minor League All-Star Game and the All-Star Game. And Canada's finest, Joey Votto, is going to it for a sixth time. Congratulations to him and the Cincinnati Reds. We had a chance to chat with Joey a little earlier. Happy to be joined now by six-time All-Star, six times now, Joey Votto, Toronto's own. Joey, thanks so much for being with us on TSN 1050. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
It's the sixth All-Star game. Well, I guess you've had experience playing in five now. Is five different from three, from one? Will this one be any different for you?
You know, so the first few of them, we were winning a lot, and I was playing good baseball, and I just think that you take it for granted. You think that it's going to happen every year, and it's automatic. I had been voted in by the fans, and things change very quickly, and I had a few years where I didn't make the team, and after a while, you see other guys play, and you feel like you're playing well, and you feel like you should be amongst that group, and you know, I wasn't there, and it was a little bit bothersome, and I'm glad that I'm back. I made the team last year. I, again, made it this year, and anytime, you know, anytime you get to represent your team and then represent your league in this game, it's always been really good memories for me. So I'm very proud of making the team this year.
What's the best part of it? Is it the game? Is it hanging out with dudes you don't necessarily get to hang out with? Is it, you know, time away from your regular routine? What is it?
I think that in the middle of the season, you want to be recognized for your efforts. So I think that's the first thing. I think that guys making the team, they feel like, wow, I was at or near the best players in the league. My fellow players recognized it. The fans recognized it. Commissioner, the coaches and managers recognized it. However way you made the squad, you know, just being recognized, I think, is meaningful. But then you just go to whatever city, and it's a whirlwind. I mean, the media is nothing like most any players that they've ever seen before, other than if they've been to a World Series. You know, the fans are incredible. I mean, you ride in a car down whatever street they pick, and there's fans lining it, and you feel appreciated, and the stadium and the attendance is incredible. So, you know, it's a really, it's just a great moment in a player's career. And I think everything put together, whether it's in the moment or after a few years, you get to look back and just be really proud of it.
Joey, obviously you're excelling yet again, all-star worthy contributions to your team, leading the National League in on-base percentage. You're in the top 15 in OPS. And I'm just wondering, the Reds, of course, are struggling. You're 14 and a half games back of Milwaukee in the NL Central. You're 34 years old. This team obviously probably isn't as good as you'd hope it would be. And I'm wondering, how do you sort of look at winning at this point in your career, or wanting to win at this point in your career? And then yet the reality of the situation you're in with the Reds.
Right. Yeah. You know, we've been playing very good baseball, and we're seeing a lot of the younger players develop and improve. And I think that more exciting times are coming in the future. I know that we started off poorly, but of late it's been a really strong stretch, and we're looking to be a part of big things in the not too distant future. So we're working towards that, and I really am very excited about that. I've you know, committed a long time to the Cincinnati Reds, and you know, there's not everything is going to be good times, and I'm hoping that here in the near future, the lean times will be over with, and we can start playing playoff baseball and winning a few World Series.
Yeah, so you're actually optimistic that this turnaround can come quickly, because this has been a year where so many people have been talking about the haves and the have-nots in baseball, and I'm wondering, how do you feel like that's a problem in the game, with the disparity between the very best teams and the teams that aren't so good?
I think that there's stretches where lots of teams have a chance, and then there's other stretches where there's only a few teams that have a chance. And I think that I've seen it before, where there was, you know, half the league had a legitimate shot at making the playoffs going into the final month. So, you know, it comes and goes, and every year is very different. I really look forward to us being a part of that group of winning teams. I really feel like it's not too far in the future.
Joey, I have a real fetish for numbers, so when you pass Matt Stairs to be number two on the Canadian all-time home run list, my eyes start to go, oh, wow, this is great. Do you have any Matt Stairs memories you can share with us, or things you remember of Mr. Stairs?
Nope. Not really. I don't know him very well, and we haven't played together very much, and so as far as memories, not really. You know, he's working for the Phillies now. We've crossed paths a bunch. I think we may have played on one World Baseball Classic team together, so you know, Matt and I have a little bit of a gap in age also.
Yeah.
He was a generation before me, and it's interesting, you know, as a player, and I'm sure Matt experienced this, but as a player, you see guys that you played with and played against, or at least caught the very back end of their career, and now you see them doing something completely different in their lives, and it's really interesting. You know, I'm starting to transition. I'm starting to transition into that period in my career where I'm seeing guys manage other teams, work on the bench for other teams, work in TV, or just have a completely different path in life, and it's kind of a cool thing to see. And you know, Matt's, like I said, he's obviously working for the Phillies and doing his thing over there.
I was reminded today he played his last game at the age of 43. Will you still be playing baseball at 43, or long gone onto something else?
Tell you what, I have my doubts, and I'm 34, so I don't know. It's a long way away. I try really hard not to get past today, and I think that if you had asked him at 24 or 34 or 43, he was probably not thinking past that day, and maybe if he was, and he had set his goals on playing as long as he could, and he achieved it, then good on him, because he had a long, very successful career.
I want to ask you one question, just more from a bigger picture of baseball standpoint. As Dave mentioned, you're leading the NL in OPS for what now is seventh time. The way we feel about strikeouts from, say, when you started playing, or even when I was a kid, to now, to me, has changed dramatically. We just saw Chris Davis in eight seasons break the Baltimore Orioles all-time strikeout record that took Cal Ripken 21 years to accomplish. We've gotten very meh towards strikeouts. You not being a big strikeout guy, is that right? Is that wrong? Is that just where we are?
I think that's just where we are. And I think that, again, you'll see the game change a little bit. I think teams will make the necessary adjustments. And if there is no adjustment to be made, then perhaps this trend will continue. But, you know, for me, the strikeouts just don't work, because I don't, the give and take of me not putting the ball in play versus, you know, drawing a walk or putting the ball in play in some way. You know, I feel like that's the only shot I have of being my very best self. So, you know, some guys it works great. You know, there's guys that are willing to take the strikeouts with the home runs and the extra base hits. And really, you know, I don't feel any sort of way about that. And I think that most teams would agree with that. You know, I think that some guys, that's just how their very best case scenario works.
Hey Joey, I mean, All-Star Game is always a good time to take stock of the state of the game. And there's been, you know, in addition to that talk about the haves and the have-nots in baseball, there's been talk about how the game maybe needs a tweak or two because of the prevalence of strikeouts and the dominance of pitching. I mean, do you think it needs anything in terms of intervention in a rule change, or, you know, a lowering of the mound, or anything of that nature that you've been pondering?
Oh, man, no. I think that... I think that teams are much too smart, and I think that at some point they'll figure out what the very best version, what the very best, if I'm not mistaken, for example, the Houston Astros last year went from the most strikeouts to the least strikeouts in 1 year, mm-hmm. and they won the World Series. So teams are incredibly smart, and I think that whether it's an adjustment in philosophy or if they just embrace that style of play, or looking for new players or new, you know, new pitchers, new players, whatever it may be, the teams will make the necessary adjustments to make sure that the best and most winning product ends up on the field. So as far as rule changes, you know, I've played, this is my 12th year now. I've seen and experienced a lot of different rule changes in my career, and to ask for more rule changes, you know, sometimes my head's spinning. So, you know, I would say that whatever the front office or the commissioner wants to do, I'm sure that a lot of smart people will make that decision. But for me, I'm good with the game as it is.
Joey Votto, Cincinnati Red Star, six-time All-Star now. As this article keeps pointing out, still looking for your first All-Star hit. We're hoping for the best for you on Tuesday. Congratulations and good luck.
Still looking for my first All-Star Game hit. Yeah, I'll do my very best. Thank you very much.
Joey Votto of the Cincinnati Reds.
zinger at the end there, DT. I liked it.
Come on.
I liked it. Joey can be a sensitive character.
Let's not pretend I was trying to zing. I just, honestly, in Googling Joey Votto, they're like, oh, yeah, by the way, he's never had a hit in the All-Star game. Like, oh, that's neat, because that dude hits the ball.
He does hit it.
7 years now. This will be his seventh year, should he continue leading the league in on-base percentage. I thought that was kind of neat, but then afterward, it's like, oh, he didn't take that in the way I meant it. Just
yeah, I've interviewed him a few times. He is a very, I would say he's a very thoughtful, very sensitive, but not your regular jock. Like, Joey's a very complicated, interesting guy.
Well, the answer to the Matt Stairs question, Canadian baseball icon, he's like, no. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It wasn't the one we expected. There's nothing bad about it. There's nothing amazing about it.
No, there's nothing bad about it. Hey, man, he's a two-time Lou Marsh Trophy winner, is our greatest athlete of the year, deserving of probably consideration in a couple of other years. Because, man, in a sport with a lot of depth and a lot of global talent, this guy has been at the forefront of hitting at baseball, which a lot of people say is the toughest thing to do in sports since he got into the league, or since he really hit his prime maybe a decade ago.
Yeah, he's making the money. He's hitting the baseball. Cincinnati, not, I mean, what, 10 games under .500, not performing the way they would like, or he would like.
Yeah, he had some optimism in that interview about the fate of the Reds that I don't think a lot of people share right now.
They signed Ken Griffey Jr. to brush off the mirror. Yeah. Do you remember that? That's one of the saddest stories I can think of from enjoying baseball. Griffey leaves the Mariners, goes to the Reds, going home. It's going to be amazing. Griffey's, at the time, one of the unbelievable, unmatchable talents in baseball, and then just injured off a cliff.
Fell off the cliff with injuries, yeah.
Albert Pujols in St. Louis, blowing the world apart, goes to L.A., off the cliff.
Yeah. It's amazing. Look at Josh Donaldson falling off a cliff right before our eyes here in Toronto. From MVP to a guy that is going to be very hard-pressed to earn the kind of money he probably figured he was due to earn.
Amount of money you would have bet he got in the contract. 2 years ago, you would have bet he got X amount.
Well, I mean,
I just want to phrase it this way. The amount he actually will get. The difference between those two is over or under $70 million difference.
I think it's over. I think it's over.
He's lost a lot of money, hey?
So far, I mean, unless he can have a late season renaissance here and prove he's still the same player that won the MVP a couple of years ago. I mean, it's just hard to imagine how, given his track record of really having a hard time staying healthy, given the fact he's 32 years old, turns 33 in December, and then given the market for players in this era, especially power players, it's, you know, where we've seen the free agency market not be what it was in the past. It's just hard for me to imagine how he's not going to have left 100+ million on the table compared to what he would have got if he could have signed a couple of years ago.
It just does on some real level, it breaks my heart that he will never make all the money that he deserved to make for those years just because of the rules and when he came up. Jose Bautista will never get back pay for those years where he was unbelievable. It's life. It happens to some people. It doesn't. Others make money that they don't deserve at all.
See, there's a part of you that feels bad for him, but
I do.
I can't find that part in me because the man has earned $57 million in career earnings to date.
Yeah,
I mean, he's done okay for himself.
Some of those years where he made no money at all, and like based on dollars per war, he was worth $25 or $30 million. Like it just. Timofey Mozgov makes $55 million, $64 million to sit on the bench for whatever team he's been lumped on now. It hurts a little bit, but it's life, right? And it's the sports life.
It is the sports life. And hey, man, the Major League Baseball collective bargaining agreement makes it tough to get to free agency, right? Like, it's not easy to get to your payday. And especially when you're a late bloomer like Josh Donaldson, who, you know, didn't get into the majors until he was 24 and really didn't hit his stride until he was past 26, you know, it's been very difficult for him to make the big money. But then again, I would say a guy making, what's he earning this year? $23 million this year. I call that big money. Like that's pretty much passes as big money in my household. I don't know about yours.
One of us feels for rich people. One of us does not feel quite as bad for rich people. And yet we are both right to some degree. I'm going to say I'm kind of right too. It is 624. It's Overdrive on TSN 1050, tsn1050.ca, and the iHeartRadio app. Overdrive delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com. couple of quick news and notes. Freddie Gauthier, the GOAT, will continue to be talked about on Overdrive as he re-signs for 2 years and $1.35 million. That is great. DeMar DeRozan, if you saw it, wiped his Instagram account. And anything, basically, he still has it. He still has his 2.2 million followers, still follows 150 people, but all the pictures are gone. So we all turn into internet sleuths and putting the puzzle together. What does this mean? Was it Zach Lowe mentioning that he should be a piece in Toronto's play to get San Antonio Spurs? I've lost the name.
You've lost Kawhi Leonard. You've lost the name Kawhi Leonard.
Every once in a while, it just slips me. But Kawhi,
yeah, I know the feeling. I do that like twice a day.
So of course we're all everybody wants why what happened why. Sometimes guys are in their 20s.
Well, DeMar's a mysterious man. Obviously, he's been open about his battles with mental health. You wonder if this is some sort of a mental health thing he's going through. He's definitely put out cryptic messages that have called people that care about him to be concerned about him at times when it comes to dark days and other things he's tweeted about or Instagrammed about. But so who knows with DeMar DeRozan? Of course, he's a beloved figure. I've got a ton of respect for him. What he's doing on social media at any given moment is always a point of fascination for Raptor fans, but to read too much into it at this moment. And I got news for you. If the Raptors had to give up DeMar DeRozan to get Kawhi Leonard, Raptor fans, as much as they love DeMar DeRozan, would be probably rejoicing, even if Kawhi Leonard only hung around for a year and then moved on.
We're rooting for the laundry. It'd be sad to see DeMar go, but you're rooting for the laundry.
Well, you're rooting to win the East in a year when LeBron leaves the East.
Zach Lowe, he's not reporting anything. He likes to say on his podcast, The Lowe Post, this is not a report. This is just me speculating. So he's speculating. I'll pose this to you. To acquire Kawhi Leonard.
And by the way, he's not the only one speculating. There have been all kinds of people writing about this. And I've said on this show, Masai Ujiri is in swing hard mode right now.
Yeah.
Masai Ujiri is not a happy man. He's a restless man. He's not happy with the way this season ended. He's not happy that he fired Dwayne Casey and replaced him with Nick Nurse, because that so far has been one of his only options in terms of improving this team. But he wants another option, and he's looking hard for it.
So I'll pose you one of the hypotheticals that Zach Lowe put out there. Tell me what you think. Tell us what you think on the Twitter box, at DT on SC. Lowe proposes it's DeMar DeRozan, and some of this is salary matching, and then let's just grab it. Say it's DeMar DeRozan, OG Anunoby, and a future first-round pick to get Kawhi Leonard, and you're not necessarily guaranteed he's going to stick around.
Right.
Dave Festchuk, do you do it?
Well, obviously you need to know as much as you can know about what are Kawhi Leonard's future plans. Would he have any interest in signing in Toronto? And maybe Kawhi Leonard can't answer that question because he's never played in Toronto. And you need
Paul George.
Yeah, exactly. You need to have him come here for a year and then do everything you can to make the Toronto experience playing in front of a great crowd that has always been one of the NBA's best home atmospheres. You would have to find a way to convince him to stay. And of course, what would do better than convincing him than winning the East? And if you got him on this roster with the young players that you've got now, giving up OG Anunoby,
that'd be tough.
I wouldn't be as happy about that if I could give up Pascal Siakam in there instead of OG Anunoby, if I could find another way to do it without giving up OG, because to me OG Anunoby represents the most promising young player you have on your roster.
Yeah.
And the idea that you would only have Kawhi Leonard, the worst case scenario is you'd have him as a 1 year rental. As much as I believe that that's a possibility and it might be worth doing, because you're coming to the end of this DeMar DeRozan, Kyle Lowry era, whether you like it or not. And you know, we've seen the limits of what those two can do leading this team, and we don't like the limits of what they can do leading this team, because basketball fans in this town have become spoiled. They want more. They want to get to an NBA Finals, not just an Eastern Conference Finals. So all that said, man, it's there's so many moving parts in a deal like that. Obviously, you're giving up a draft pick. Obviously, you're going to give up a prime young player. And you're going to have to give up a guy like DeMar DeRozan for sure.
But you get a guy who's going to be the MVP of the league one day if he's healthy.
But you got to get his medical records. You have to know his knee is healthy, because the mystery and the acrimony that surrounded Kawhi Leonard's knee injury this season is something we've never seen before. We've never seen the gold standard franchise in the NBA, which is what the Spurs are, been dragged through the mud like this. We've never seen them toss darts at a player the way some of the Spurs and ex-Spurs have tossed darts at Kawhi Leonard. I don't like the way this has all gone down. And again, you need to know more about what's going on with the knee, what's going on with Kawhi Leonard. And the problem is, he's got a reputation for being one of the most incommunicative persons in the NBA. his,
which is why it fits in Toronto, because ESPN doesn't care about Toronto. Boom. Nobody will. You'll never be known in America
again.
Something
there.
It'd be amazing. We got to talk about the Montreal Canadiens because, and I say that because I every once in a while I slip into the Canadiens instead of the Canadiens. The Athletic saying that Mark Bergevin, his intention is to trade Max Pacioretty as soon as possible. So Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette joins us. Matt, what do you take from the report that that it's Bergevin's intention to trade Pacioretty as soon as possible?
Well, I mean, he's tried to trade him already, so I think that, you know, there's an intention there to try to trade him, but you don't know how much of this is part of the negotiating process. Pacioretty has one more year remaining on a very cap-friendly contract. He's looking for a lot more money in any extension. And this might be a way of, you know, testing whether Pacioretty really wants to stay in Montreal, which I believe he does, and whether he's willing to take a bit of a hometown discount.
You wrote, what was it, a week ago, that they should resign him long-term. Are you still on that? And why do you think that Patch's long-term is good for the Canadiens?
Well,
it'll work,
Sally. I think he's a good player. I mean, this is a team that desperately needs scoring. They were 30th in the league last year in goals scored. And here's a guy who can score 30 goals. He's done that five of the last 6 years. You look at the other guys who got contracts lately, Logan Couture, same age, a few months younger, but he's got something like 18 or 19 goals less than Pacioretty since the lockout. He got 8 years at $8 million. Same team gave Evander Kane 7 years at $7 million. Now, I wouldn't give Evander Kane a seven-year contract for any amount of money, when you just look at his past record and things like that. But, you know, he got 7 years for $7 million. He's got something like 50 goals less than Pacioretty does. So, I mean, Pacioretty's a quality player. He loves it here in Montreal. People are always whining about, you know, players don't want to come to Montreal. Here's a guy who's established roots here. He lives here full-time, year-round. And, he wants to be here.
Well, Pat, it's an interesting moment in Canadiens history. Obviously, coming off a 71-point season, a lot of disappointment, a lot of outrage around the fan base in Montreal. And there's a feeling that maybe the reason you trade Max Pacioretty is because you need to get into a rebuild mode here. You need to find a way to build the pipeline of young players that the Canadiens currently lack. I mean, where do you stand on that philosophical issue?
Well, that would be fine if they would say we're going in a rebuild. But they're not talking about a rebuild. They're talking about a reset. And if it's a reset, then Pacioretty has to stay. Mm-hmm. If it's a rebuild, try to figure out, what you can get for Carey Price. Try to figure out if you can unload Shea Weber's contract. If you're rebuilding, then do full-out rebuild. But, if you're just making little patchwork quilts here and there, you know, it's incredibly difficult to rebuild unless you're going to go 3-4 years without making the playoffs. And I don't think the fans will stand for that.
Well, a lot of people said the same thing in Toronto, Pat, when Brendan Shanahan took over, that people
would.
I'll tell
you, it's very different in Toronto because you've got 9 zillion head offices there that buy tickets. You go to a Leafs game and you go there and they drop the puck and half the seats in the lower bowl are empty. Because the guy's doing business deals down the suites.
Yeah, you're right about that. So you don't think people will fill the Bell Center, no questions asked, through a rebuild?
Well, we saw at the end of the season last year, there were, 500 empty seats. Then there were 700 empty seats. Then there were 1,000 empty seats. There were 1,300. They had a sellout every night. People were paying $150, $200 for tickets in the lower bowl and not going to the games. So it means that they had lost interest and they couldn't find anybody to give the tickets away to.
Right, but
I was outside with a scalper one night, and he had $5,000 worth of unsold tickets that he couldn't unload.
Yeah, no, I feel for the scalpers in a moment like that for sure. But Pat, I mean, but do you think, like, if you articulate the rebuild and you tell people what you're up to and you tell them you're trying to stock the farm system and build the pipeline of young players while getting some good draft picks and hopefully winning a lottery, do you not think that could sell?
Well, it could sell if I have a situation like, they've had two top 10 picks before this year. During the Bergevin regime. One of them was Alex Galchenyuk, he's gone.
Yeah.
One of them was Mikhail Sergachev, he's gone.
Oops.
So what do you say? We're going to stock up with draft picks. Oh, then we're going to trade them.
Yeah.
You know, if you said, we're going to do this and we're going to keep these draft picks, we're going to develop them. People have no faith in the development system. Now they've changed. They've got Joel Bouchard in there replacing Sylvain Lefebvre as the coach in Laval. They brought in Dominic Ducharme, a very successful junior coach, as an assistant. You know, they've made some efforts to improve the development part of it. They've shifted some people in their in their management roles. But you know, if you look at what they've done in the last 6 years, you know, there's not a lot of reason to believe that you can go that route and come up with the right guys.
Pat Hickey, the Montreal Gazette, joining us on TSN 1050. It is Overdrive. I was talking about it with some friends, some coworkers a couple days ago. Pat, where do you think the Montreal Canadiens are right now versus where, say, the Toronto Maple Leafs were pre-Mike Babcock, the year before Mike Babcock got here? Are those situations similar? Is it as bleak for Montreal as it was for Toronto then, or are they different?
Well, I think here's one big difference. Carey Price. I mean, I still don't think the Leafs have a goaltender. So, you know, you have a guy, you know, who is arguably one of the best goaltenders in the world. Now, he's coming off one of the worst seasons of any goaltender ever. I mean, this was a total disaster last year. But if Carey Price can turn it around right away, they're a better team. If Shea Weber comes back from these surgeries and plays, then they've got, you know, a good, solid defenseman. They get a defenseman on the right side in Weber. They got a guy behind them in Jeff Petrie. You've got a couple of young guys coming up. You know, they don't look that bad.
No, I understand that for sure, Pat. But is it
but
how?
The problem sorry, go is ahead. They still don't have any centers.
Yeah,
they drafted seven of them this year.
Wow!
But who knows when any of those guys will be ready, including the guy they drafted at number 3 overall.
Exactly. So what's your level of concern, though, Pat, when you talk about, obviously, we know Shea Weber's credentials, but he'll be 33 next month, and he obviously is suffering right now through an injury. And we all know Carey Price's... two injuries. We all know Carey Price's credentials, but he'll be 31 next month, and he's just starting an 8-year deal at 80-plus million. I mean, what's your level of concern that age is catching up with those guys as the core of your team?
Well, that's why... You know, if you're resetting, you've got to do things quickly, and you've got to change things around because your window probably closed a year ago.
Yeah.
But you know what? The question is now, you know, whether they're going to keep it open a little bit and stay with those guys, or if they're going to have a rebuild, then you got to tell those guys that you're moving on. Tell your fans you're moving on. But those two guys have contracts that are very difficult to move. Weber's, I would say, is impossible to move. And Carey Price, you'd have to have some assurance that last year was an aberration.
Yeah. And a $10.5 million hole to fill on someone else's team could be tough to find. Pat, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate you joining us on Overdrive.
My pleasure. Anytime, guys.
Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette. Hey, Best Bets is coming up. It is 6:44 on Overdrive. Whatever three I pick, maybe pick the opposite the way it's been going for me on Landsberg in the morning. Is that's fair to say?
That's fair. Has to it say? Been that bad?
2-4 on the sport I supposedly know some stuff about. Best Bets, and we'll wrap up the show coming up on Overdrive. Time now for today's Best Bets, brought to you by ProLine. Take the Yankees, visitors against Baltimore. Somehow Baltimore's taken 2 of 3 so far. That cannot continue. Take Cincinnati, Joey Votto, nice enough to join us. So we take the Reds over Cleveland, at the visitor as well. And Chris Sale versus Bartolo Colon. Let's go with Sale. Boston is the home team. Those are the three picks. Throw $20 on that. When I get all three right, I score $88.40. Find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio, and you can get way into the game with ProLine. It is the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Before you wager, get the latest odds, event info, matchup stats on your phone. ProLine, get way into the game.
So let me get this straight. You're guest hosting the Great Overdrive on TSN 1050, and you're betting against Bartolo Colon?
That's
the big sexy, the mascot of this show, the biggest hero this show has ever prophesied or professed to worship? I mean,
that is
he is the spirit animal of this show. You cannot bet against Bartolo Colon on this show.
I just tried to build a house on ancient burial grounds.
Seriously. Oh,
that is not great. Don't tell the guys I did that, okay?
I won't mention it.
Please don't mention that.
Let's pretend it never happened.
That would be great. A couple minutes before we go, we were just talking with Pat Hickey. What do you think about the Carey Price contract? As he mentioned, just starting now, 8 years, $84 million. Nice or albatross-ish?
Well, of course, like with everything with goaltending, it's hard to know because you don't know, is he going to be the Carey Price that had a 900 save percentage this year, or is he going to be the Carey Price that's, you know, the best player on Canada and is the best goaltender on the planet at any given moment? We don't know the answer to that, but if he's not, and if he's got to be so good to justify that deal, like he's got to be a top three goaltender. He's got to be in the Vezina conversation every year to make that deal make sense. And to think he's going to do it, turning 31 next month for 8 more years, I mean, you're going out on a limb.
Yeah, it's so heavy at the end. He's 38. He's going to make, you know, $10.5 million.
Hey, and not as bad. Like Shea Weber's on the hook for get 7.9 million for the next 8 years, and he's turning 33 next month. So enjoy that, Shay.
And when you look at their depth chart, pretend Pacioretty is gone and they don't trade him, and he was to walk next season, like Jonathan Drouin, Andrew Shaw, Brendan Gallagher, Max Domi are your highest paid players.
And that's the problem.
It's
a depth chart that has no depth. I mean, it's just a team that doesn't have any centermen. You talk about the Leafs being, you know, an embarrassment of riches down the middle now with Tavares and Matthews and Kadri and whoever plays fourth line center, whether it's Parr, Lindholm, or whoever, they're going to be the deepest team at that position. Well, Montreal's the polar opposite. They're the team that lacks the most talent at that position in the league. And it speaks to why, as Pat Hickey pointed out, they were last in the league in scoring, or I guess 30th in the league in scoring this past season.
Congratulations to Croatia. 2-1 winners in extra time versus England. Croatia goes on to Sunday's World Cup final versus France. You can hear it here starting at 10 a.m. on Sunday. I almost said Eastern again because I'm still stuck in SportsCenter. The kickoff is at 11 o'clock, but Wheeler and Noel Butler will have the pregame show. You can see the guys in their great postgame coverage on SportsCenter all night tonight across the TSN network. Overdrive, 6:53. Dave Festchuk, great working with you once again.
Great seeing you.
The Toronto Star, certainly read everything that he is doing. Anything you're working on right now?
You know what? I've been off from the Toronto Star this week.
So oh,
just,
nice.
Just filling in here and having some fun.
Came to work on his vacation. That's awesome.
Been fun.
For Brian Hayes, I'm Derek Taylor. Thanks so much. It's Overdrive, TSN 1050, tsn1050.ca.